People say less is more. At Red Barn, we think less is better. It's what you won't find that sets our natural premium pet food apart. No byproducts, no corn or soy, no fillers. Just the natural ingredients your pets need to live the healthy life they deserve. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Naturals Pet Food. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Visit redbarninc.com/coupon to save a dollar off your first can.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Creating the Life You Love to Live. I am your host, Bevan Lynch, and I am a Chicago-based business and life coach, and I work with clients from all over the world to create the life that they love to live and the business that they love to create. My guest today is Rohini Ross, and Rohini is an expert in helping women transform their lives. She graduated with her MA in counseling psychology from the University of Santa Monica, and she's a personal empowerment and relationship coach in Los Angeles. And Rohini is one of those shining examples of really embodying what you teach and what you show other people. She is one of the things that I absolutely love watching about her as we're in a training together in Phoenix and LA is that she really lives the life of a mom who really cares about her kids and a woman who really cares passionately about her clients and about her business. So I'm really excited today to explore You Are the One That Matters with Rohini. So welcome to the show today.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
You are so welcome. So, Rohini, I was rereading, you know, about our show today that we had decided to explore, and the first paragraph, the first couple of paragraphs where you talk about, you know, 6 years ago you were married to someone you said was an angry, unsupportive, selfish, immature, and emotionally abusive man, and this is still the same man you're married to today, and I thought, wow, how provocative. What a provocative statement to start with.
Yes, it even kind of boggles my mind at times. It's like, wow. not so much about him, but who I was at that point in time, that I was seeing the world that way. You know, it's like, whoa. So do you want to start there?
Yeah, I love that because it was. Then, you know, as we read further, and it's when you first, you know, we first talked about this where you said, you know, the growth that you've had, you don't condone his behavior, but you really took responsibility and you took ownership for your role in the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At that time, I didn't realize what I was creating for myself, and I felt like I was really a victim to his behavior, excuse me, and to his actions, and that my happiness was dependent on him being different and that I would be okay when he was different. And that was a losing way to view the situation because my energy then went into changing him or trying to change him, which never works, to criticizing, to judging, and to really doing the things that I saw him doing to me, but in less overt ways, but really no different. And it was destroying our relationship with each other. And I was not, at that point, not willing or not really able, based on my awareness at that time, to understand the role that I was playing in the painful situation that I was in. And so then I got to a point, you know, typically things get to a point where things are too painful. So I got to that place where it's like, I can't stay in this marriage anymore. I've had enough. Mm-hmm. It wasn't working. And so that was the breaking point. And we did separate briefly. And it was during that time that I was able to wake up and realize that I loved him and that I did want to be with him and that he is the father of my children and that, you know, I wanted to make it work. And it wasn't that he was such a terrible person, it was that the way that we were connecting with each other wasn't working. And I started to see how I was really unhappy and it wasn't his fault, that I had given up on my dreams. I had wanted to, you know, I'd always wanted to be some kind of healer. And, you know, based on what I thought I needed to do, I decided that I needed to go back to work and took an administrative job so that, you know, money would be okay. But I was really unhappy doing that, and I was really angry at him, blaming him for that when I made that decision, and he never asked me to do that. So I started to realize, you know, I made that decision, and I don't have to make that decision anymore. And it's really not his fault, and it's not anything to do with him. It's about me. And that's when I felt that just the energy and the relief come in that I'm the person that has been hurting me. Not that that's a good thing, but there's power in knowing that I can stop doing that now. And so that was a huge wake-up for me, and I'm so grateful, even for those difficult times, I'm so grateful for the experience because it was what helped me to wake up to my own personal power, to my own ability to create my life in the way that I want to create it, not on somebody else's terms. And then, you know, the joy just comes in, the pleasure, the happiness, the love, the fulfillment. I was able to really connect with what was already inside of me at that point. But because I had been so focused on what wasn't working, why I wasn't happy, I wasn't able to connect into that before. So that was my wake-up call. And at that point, I went back to university. I got my master's in counseling psychology. And I realized I want to share this with other people. I want to help others be able to use these skills in their own lives so they don't have to suffer the way that I suffered. Or if they are suffering, they can find ways to not suffer anymore.
Right. Well, I want to draw a really important distinction because, like I said, you know, this is sort of a provocative statement that you made, and I can kind of hear out in the, you know, out in the universe people listening and saying, well, wait a second, you know, there's so many people, both men and women, in abusive relationships, you know, emotionally or physically abusive relationships, and are you saying that, you know, the victim, quote unquote, the victim should take responsibility? And that to me is not at all what either of us is saying. It's really a matter of taking personal responsibility for your own power. And sometimes that shows up as, you know, leaving a relationship, and sometimes it shows up as getting really present in a relationship and really stopping the point where you say, I am unhappy because of you, or I will be happy because of you.
I agree with that distinction completely, and I want to be clear that I'm not blaming victims in relationships for their circumstances. But what I am saying is that there's a possibility to take responsibility for your own happiness. And that may indeed mean leaving a relationship that's not working. And that's what I did. I just happened to, through my introspection, decide, you know what, I do want to make this work. That was my decision. That's not everybody's decision. But it's the step to take responsibility for your own happiness and to really look at what that's going to take and to really be able to make that commitment to yourself. And I think for me, what's so important about taking responsibility for your own happiness is recognizing that that happiness is actually on the inside, that that comes from our, you know, innate sense of well-being, our ability to connect deeply with ourselves, and that that's where that authentic feeling of happiness comes from rather than a relationship, you know, money, job, family, all of that. Those are nice things when they're working, but the happiness piece really is inside of us. And if a relationship is hurting us, then we really need to look at how do I take care of myself? How do I take responsibility for my own happiness? And that may mean saying, you know, no, that's not working for me. I can't do this. It's hurting me.
Right. Well, and, you know, as we're talking about relationships, it's friendships, it's family relationships, it's romantic relationships. I know there was a time earlier this year where I was connected with somebody who I loved dearly, and he was, you know, an ex-boyfriend and somebody, you know, that we broke up a long time ago, but we had connected, we continued to connect, and it continued to be a very painful relationship. And, you know, I had all sorts of support from friends and family about what a jerk he was. But I was talking to him and I said, you know, at some point I have to take responsibility for the role that I play in allowing you to continually hurt me. And that was a huge revelation to me because you know, like I said, here I could see the painful behaviors and the really angry behaviors that he was exhibiting, but I was the one who was continuing to go back for more and who was continuing to allow that to be in my life. And to be honest, I'm not saying that I've completely cut him out from my life, but just that acknowledgement that, wait a second, I can take some ownership and I can take some responsibility here, open my eyes to the possibility that, yeah, you know, this is, I have a lot of power in this situation.
That's great. And what it makes me think about is one of the other pieces that I teach is, in terms of taking responsibility for your own happiness, it's really helpful to be aware of what some of your core needs are. And so this is based on Abraham Maslow's work, and he created the hierarchy of needs. And there's the survival needs of oxygen, food, and water. Once those are met, we still have some core needs that we need as humans, and they are safety, so that we're physically safe, but also emotionally safe, that we have a sense of belonging, or that we're able to connect with people, and also that we feel that we're important, or another way of saying that is that we have good self-esteem. And those, being aware of what those core needs are, and then saying, I'm going to take responsibility for meeting those needs myself. I'm not going to have another person, another thing outside of me responsible for taking care of those needs, which is what I heard you say when you decided to make that shift, is you took some responsibility for meeting your core needs, and that meant having less contact with this person. And for me, defining them and really getting clear, okay, how do I help myself feel emotionally safe? What is it that I can do for me? What do I need to do when I need to feel like I belong and that I feel connected? What are the things that work for me? What happens when I'm feeling worthless and unworthy? How do I really connect with my importance and help me connect with my authentic self-esteem? So having some skills in place that can help us to meet those needs internally with our own volition, through our own behavior, through our own actions, makes us so much less vulnerable to the ups and downs of what other people are going through. Because when you're talking about that man, what's so important to remember is when someone's having those kind of challenges, whether it's anger, you know, whatever their acting out behavior is, they are suffering. That's a reflection of their pain. And I love the analogy that Greg Bear uses. He's a relationship expert too, and he talks about this person lying beside the pool reading a newspaper, and they're enjoying it and it's a great article, and then they start getting splashed, and so it's like, oh, I'm really into the newspaper article, I'm just going to keep reading it, and the splashing just keeps getting worse and worse, and eventually their newspaper is soaked, and they're so angry at this point, they can't believe that this person is so inconsiderate, they throw the newspaper down, they look at this person in the pool, and the person is drowning. And immediately, because of their shift in perception, there's a shift in their emotional response. And they go from anger to helping. And,
right.
You know, in the metaphor, they obviously help them out of the pool. But in life, it's when we see someone angry, rejecting, whatever that behavior looks like, they're drowning in their own emotional experience. And if we can really be able to not take that personally, and see, oh, they're not okay. It's nothing to do with me. Maybe you even triggered it, but it's still nothing to do with you. It's their issue that they're having to work through. It takes the edge off of it for us personally, and it also helps us have compassion for them not being okay. And that may still mean that you set the boundary of, you know, I'm not going to spend much time with this person, but there's a different experience of what's going on that doesn't have the personal pain connected to it, and also kind of accept them for who they are, love them for who they are, but then also set boundaries based on what the reality is.
Yeah, and acceptance has come up a lot recently in the past few weeks and probably in the past few months about just on this show about, you know, acceptance being just where things are and really accepting them without being resigned to it can never change. You know, I had a client that I was talking to last week about a relationship that she's starting, and you know, it's a little rocky. And we were talking about how they had both, you know, both of the two in the relationship had decided that things were really going to be a lot easier next year, and they were really kind of holding on to where they were now and allowing it to be in order to grow. And when I spoke to my client, it became abundantly clear that she was dating a perception of this man in the future, of who he could be. Mm-hmm. And because of that, she's getting really frustrated. You know, why isn't he this way? Why isn't he giving me the attention? And I finally just asked her, you know, are you dating the image of who he could be? And she got really quiet, but she realized, yeah, I am. And that, like you were just saying, that perception, the perception of somebody splashing you rather than drowning, and the perception of somebody could be a really peaceful, loving, great person, but right now they're struggling, that just that shift into, can I accept this person as they am and be compassionate and loving and open to the possibility of change?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that is crucial. It's so much better to be living in a relationship and experiencing the relationship based on reality rather than
mm-hmm.
based on future projections of what we think might be or could
mm-hmm.
be.
And it is okay in that situation to say, no, I cannot be in a romantic relationship with this person as they are now. I mean, unfortunately, I've had to make that decision with people who I think are great people. They're going to really open up to their potential, but right now they're just not able to give me what I need in a romantic relationship. And, you know, my comment, which I don't think was really well received during a breakup conversation, was, I don't want you to change. I'm not asking you to change. I just don't want to be with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is hard to hear sometimes.
It is hard to hear. And again, like we were talking about, it's not about blaming. It's really just about letting go of a victim mentality and opening up to the fact that you have the power in any situation to take care of your own happiness.
Exactly. And that oftentimes what I find when I work with people is that when they are able to accept the person for who they are, that's when possibilities open up. They think that, you know, the fear is that if I just accept things the way they are right now, that I'm never going to be happy, it's never going to work. So many times the opposite is true, and that's what I experienced in my life, is that
mm-hmm.
when I got reality-based, I realized what I wanted, and what I wanted was what I had. Maybe not
mm-hmm.
in the exact form that it was in, but that I realized it didn't need to be that way, not because of who I was with, but because of how I was acting within that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
right.
you know, if I'm sort of seeing the potential in my partner and wanting him to live up to that potential, that's experiences rejection and criticism, because that's not where he is right now.
Uh-huh.
And there's a feeling of I'm not good enough and I can never please you. And so being able to interrupt that dynamic and to say, you know, I love and accept you exactly as you are. These things I don't like so much, and let's talk about how to work with this part of you and how we can make it work. I mean, there's going to be deal breakers. If someone wants to live in Australia and the other person wants to live in Canada, that's probably a deal breaker. But,
uh-huh.
you know, there's lots of things that we can find ways that I don't even like the word compromise, because it feels like we're giving up a part of what's important to us. So it's really finding
mm-hmm.
those win-win combinations. It's like, yes, you like to go to the movies on Friday night. I hate doing that. You go, and I'm going to enjoy time with my friends. That's a
uh-huh.
win-win. It's not a compromise. So being able to work those things out, but that can really only be done when we're accepting what the reality is. In a
right.
much more extreme situation, one of my clients I'm working with is an adult, but he's still very triggered by his parents. And what, you know, through our conversation, what came forward was that he was constantly approaching his parents, expecting them to be different than they are, wanting them to treat him differently than they do. And so he was continually feeling angry with them, but he wasn't being realistic about who they are and what they're capable of. And once
mm-hmm.
he was able to see they're not good at that. But why do I keep going for that? Why can't I just accept what they're able to be for me? They can enjoy a nice evening together when we have dinner, but they can't stay for a week at my house. It doesn't work for them or for me. How can I set the boundaries for myself in a way that I feel safe and secure, and I can love and accept them for who they are and really appreciate the relationship and what they've given to me, rather than continually banging his head against the wall thinking that the wall wasn't going to be there, because it always was. And so it's like going to a certain place in the garden where there's a weedy patch that you can't do anything about, but only looking at that rather than looking at the beautiful garden that's all around it.
Right. Well, and it's having the conversation with the outcome you've already created.
Right.
And I see that a lot where, you know, ask somebody, well, you know, what happened when you asked that question? You know, what happened when you talk to your parents about having dinner rather than staying for a week? Oh, well, I already know what they're going to say. I already know they're going to say this. And, you know, they very well might. You know, they may, if you approach somebody and, you know, let's stick with the analogy of the parents, the story of the parents of, you know, when you approach your parents and you say, I'd love to have dinner with you, they may say, well, we want to stay for a week. But until you open that dialogue and really create an open space, you don't know. And if you go into it, feeling like, well, I know they're going to say this, then you're approaching it from a different attitude and a different place.
Exactly. That's a great way of stating that.
Yeah. And the other thing that people forget is that when you ask somebody a question, you have to create the space for them to either say yes or no. Because if you're not allowing that, then it's a demand.
Exactly. And that's what was happening with this gentleman. He was really demanding that his parents be a certain way, and that's not who they are. And it's not about right or wrong at that point. It's about what is. And when he was able to not have the tantrum about them not being exactly the way that he wanted, he was then able to appreciate them for who they are, and more importantly, get on with his life. He's an adult. He's not a child living with his parents. He's an adult feeling stuck and caught up in, you know, his historical experiences that he was recreating in the present moment. So he was able to recognize, I can create something different. And the other piece that was really important is that he was doing to himself a lot of the things that he perceived his parents doing to him. And that was the deeper part of the conversation, was his behavior and how he was acting in his own personal life towards himself included neglect, included rejection. And that was the piece that really needed to shift for him, because he wasn't aware of how he was neglecting himself. He wasn't aware of when he was getting caught up in those patterns of self-rejection. And that was where the shift really happened, was when he was able to take good care of himself, nurture his body physically, when he was able to not have that huge, harsh inner critic dominating his life, and to let go of that voice, or at least not pay attention to that voice, and start to follow what his wanting was, like Michael Neal would say, to be able to discover where his happiness lie internally and then what he wanted to do externally. And the reality was that he was being abusive with himself. And his parents were triggering him not so much because of who they were, but because of how painful it was to have their behavior touch in on the behavior that he was already doing to himself. So as soon as he was able to take care of himself, be loving with himself, be accepting of himself, and start living his life, then his parents weren't an issue. It's not, there may be certain things, like we're saying, about whether it's a week or a day or a dinner, certain things like that he needed to think about, but it wasn't like this tremendous focus on how they were upsetting his life.
Right. And that's such a key component when we talk about, you know, you mentioned here about forgiveness and how you weren't condoning your husband's relationship or your husband's actions. And as you're talking about your client, even, feeling neglected and abused really by the patterns that he was creating in his own mind. That's a lot that we don't realize about forgiveness. Last year, I did some work in Washington, in LeConnor, Washington, with Pransky and Associates, and we talked a lot about forgiveness while I was there. And I really struggled because I said to the woman I was working with, there were three people that I just couldn't forgive. And then I really got down to one person, and I felt like that one person was, you know, my family and my friends would be really upset. They would be angry if I forgave this person, because he had really, when I was younger, put me into really through some traumatic situations. And what I came to discover by the end of the week was that forgiveness isn't about the other person. Mm-hmm. It's not about condoning their actions or their behaviors. It's not about validating them and saying that it was okay. But it is about releasing yourself from the mental anguish of that loop, of that continued reliving of situations and that anxiety and anger and panic and any of those negative emotions that come up, by allowing yourself to continue thinking about that. I like to call it, you're giving that person free rent in your mind. And when you can release that, when you can say, look, I'm not condoning what you did, but I am letting myself out of this, and I'm forgiving you, and that will let me stop reliving it. That's a really powerful place to come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of freedom in that you experience, I'm sure.
Yeah. And when we talk about, because I know earlier this year when you and I were talking about the relationship coaching that you do, and you are very open about the fact that it doesn't have to be two people coming to this coaching. It can just be one person who's committed to really getting the full potential out of a relationship that you work with.
Exactly. I work with who's willing to show up. Sometimes that's a couple, sometimes that's a family, sometimes that's just an individual. And, you know, each experience is powerful, and the reality of it is, even if I'm working with a couple, each of them has to do their individual work.
Uh-huh.
It's not about, you know, one person doing it all, but when one person makes a shift, everything changes. And the metaphor I use is a dance. If you're in a couple relationship, or even any family, any relationship, you're doing a dance together. As soon as one person changes the steps, the dance has to change. Now,
uh-huh.
We can't predict what the outcome is going to be. I can't say, you know, I'll work with one member of a couple and that's going to fix your relationship. That's never what I would use as a statement. But what I will say is that I can work with you to help you remove whatever the blocks are that are getting in your way of being happy, of
uh-huh.
living life on your terms and experiencing yourself in the way that you want to experience yourself. And that will benefit your relationship. The outcome of that is kind of like the side effect. It's the byproduct. And many, many times, the relationships improve and get better, even with the other person not doing their work and not changing. And
mm-hmm.
you know, one example I have is with a couple I was working with, and the husband was not willing to participate. He thought it would be a waste of time. And so the wife came in, and she was really committed to taking responsibility for her happiness. And her husband had a lot of anxiety, and she would allow his anxiety to impact her well-being. And she felt that he needed to be different in order for her to be okay. And
uh-huh.
as we worked together, she was able to recognize that her well-being was not dependent on him being different. It was dependent
uh-huh.
on her taking care of herself and meeting those needs. And then the other thing that we looked at is her old emotional roadmaps. And we all typically have emotional roadmaps that we develop in childhood. And for her, she grew up in a relationship in which her father was an alcoholic, and her learned emotional roadmap with him was that her responsibility was to take care of him and to fix whatever the problems were so things could go more smoothly. And so that worked for her as a child in terms of survival and managing that, you know, challenging experience. But what she would then do in her relationship with her husband is that when he would get upset, she would think it was her responsibility to fix it for him. And when mm-hmm. she tried to fix it for him, he would get angrier, and he didn't want her to fix it. And that's when she would then feel rejected and hurt and not understand what happened. So when she was able to see that that was a roadmap that she developed as a child, and that that wasn't actually what she wanted to be doing now, that she recognized that when she tried to make things better for her husband, it didn't work, and that she wanted things to go more smoothly for herself so that she could enjoy their relationship. They were very committed to each other. They loved each other. They weren't thinking at all of leaving each other. They just wanted to, you know, she wanted to make it work better. And so what she was able to do was recognize that when he would start to get upset, even if it wasn't to do with her, that she would start to feel uncomfortable, that it was very difficult for her to be around him when he was upset. And so when she was able to recognize that, oh, it's got nothing to do with me, he's just upset about work or this or that, he needs my love. He needs my support. He doesn't need me fixing it. Because she wasn't really trying to help him previously. She was trying to help herself feel better. She was trying to make the situation more tolerable to herself. So it, on the surface, it might look like she was trying to help him. But the real energy on it was, I need you to be different. You can't be like that because I'm not okay, so stop. Even that's not what it might have looked like on the surface. But that's what he was responding to. And so when she was able to, just like the metaphor with the swimming pool, shift her perception, recognize, oh, he's just not okay. I'm okay. And I can be okay when he's not okay. And if she, you know, it was a practice, and at times she might have to take a step away, go do something else. But then she called me up one day, I got this phone call, and she's like, Rainey, this amazing thing just happened. I'm like, what? What happened? And she said, my husband, he really lost it. I'm like, oh, that's not what I was expecting.
It sounds amazing.
I'm like, okay. So she said, it was a really big one. I'm like, okay. And she said, I was in the kitchen, and I stood there, and I was absolutely okay. And I was able to love him. I was able to accept him. And I just let him, it wasn't about her, it was about something at work, I think. And he just, he was venting, it sounds like. And she said, I was able to just let him say what he needed to say, and I was completely fine. And then when he stopped, I just went up to him, and I gave him a hug, and I said, I love you. And then I left.
Mm.
And that was all I needed to do, and he was fine. And so that was that breakthrough moment for her. That was when she got to experience that shift, that her husband wasn't a bad person. Maybe he's struggling with his emotional regulation, but that's his job to work on, not hers. She can't fix that for him. But she can love him through that process if she's able to tolerate it. So I'm not saying that if he's abusing her that she would stay for that. But if she's able to be in the moment and recognize he's just upset, he's just drowning in that emotional pool, can I be here and love him? Because when we're in that place, that's what we all need is love. And she was the most important thing was, she felt great doing it. She felt freedom. When you're talking about the forgiveness piece, there were no judgments coming up from her about how he's wrong, how he shouldn't do that. And that creates internal suffering. And so she was able to just be with what was and to love him for, you know, who he is and have compassion for the experience he's going through and then move on. And then he felt validated and accepted as a result of that. And that's where their relationship shifted, because he did shift, and he did feel more loved and appreciated because she was able to accept him and not judge him, and as a result, he was more loving and appreciative for her, even without doing the session.
Right. Well, and I was just going to say, that's what's so important about what you said, was that you do the work with whoever's willing to show up. And I know that you don't just mean show up in the room, like as far as like sitting down, but really willing to show up mentally and be open and emotionally. I cannot tell you how many people come to me, friends and potential clients and already clients, who say, you know, you really need to coach my husband, or you really need to coach my wife, because we're having problems and they need the coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fascinating because, you know, that very well may be true. They may benefit from some coaching, but the fact of the matter is, even if you can drag them to my office and sit them down in the chair across from me, if they're not willing to show up and to be mm-hmm. present and be open, I'm not saying it wouldn't work, but it would take a lot more effort on my part and on their part to get to the place of just starting.
Well, for me, the reality is I don't do any of the work. It's really the other mm-hmm. person. So if they're not willing to grow and to change and to experience their transformation, then nothing's going to happen. And that's really about their commitment to their self and their commitment to their process. And so what you're saying is that if someone comes in and they're saying, I don't want to do this, it doesn't matter what you say. They've already decided what they're going to do. And unless they change their mind, then probably, you know, very little can happen in that situation. But, you know, obviously people do change their minds. But when people,
right.
whenever somebody says, you need, you know, it's my husband, I guess, you know, he needs to do this, I can't do it, I know that there's work for them to do because that person
mm-hmm.
is a trigger. And all that person is doing is triggering some unresolved material, emotional material for that person who's in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who's in front of me or on the phone with me, I can work with that. They're there. The person who's not in the room or not available to talk, we can't do anything about that. And this comes up a lot for me when I work with parents, especially around their teenagers. And
mm-hmm.
they want their kids to be different and to behave differently. And it is very painful for many parents to have to accept that they no longer have the ability to shape and control their child's life in the way that they do when they were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the teenagers with the families that I work with are doing some, you know, are really struggling, severe behaviors, scary behaviors, and not ones that you ever want to have to come to terms with and accept. But if a parent's energy is solely focused on trying to change their child's behavior through control, typically, through some kind of power over them, the relationship gets destroyed and the behavior gets
mm-hmm.
worse. And so that's the place where it's really important when I'm working with parents is to just say, what can you do now in this moment, with your child exactly as they are, with your teen doing exactly what they're doing, what can you do that you're able to connect with them and love them with exactly what
right.
they are? And what can you do to help yourself manage your anxiety and to calm down so that you can be in a place where you're able to be a safe, loving connection for your child? And that, you know, for me, that's one of the biggest growth challenges for a parent, because it's not a relationship that they can just leave. Not that if you just leave a relationship that fixes it, but there's no running away from your child. That's a lifelong
right.
relationship. And there's also a responsibility to your child that there isn't in an adult relationship. And so it's beautiful work when parents are really willing to go to that place where I'm committed to my well-being independent of what your behavior is. And I'm also committed to loving you and accepting you exactly as you are, even though I don't like your behavior. And I'm going to set healthy boundaries for myself.
And I love that, first of all, I love that you let everyone in on the little secret that as coaches we don't do the work. Which is really funny because, you know, it looks like a lot of work, and it can look like we do a lot for our clients, but really the biggest thing we do is create a space and hold our clients lovingly and allow them to really explore. And there's a difference, and I love that you created this, the beginning of this distinction, is there's a difference between loving somebody, and Bill Cummings puts it into a form of loving kindness. And you can love people as a human being and just as an expression of love without liking them, without liking what they do, and without liking them as a person. I mean, I had to really clarify that with him because we were working in a group, and I said, there are people in here who totally rub me the wrong way. He said, oh, you don't have to like them, but you can love them. And, you know, then it really opened up this possibility to even some relationships that I have in my life with family members and with friends where I thought, man, I don't want to be around them. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like their behavior. But I realized, okay, I can love them. And by giving them that love and that space, they might change. They might not.
Mm-hmm.
But I can come from a more gentle and compassionate place and see what unfolds.
And doesn't it feel better internally for you when you're in that place?
Absolutely. And I'll be honest with you and with everybody listening. There are days that I find myself not in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And where I find
in
myself with,
human.
You know, exactly. Well, because I always like to draw attention to that because I get that when people are listening to me interview some of the people I consider the greatest coaches in the country, they forget that we're human and that we work on these, we practice these ideas because it's really, these are all a practice. And so, you know, it's not that one day you snap your fingers and you say, I will approach the world from an attitude of loving kindness, and it will never, ever shift out of that. Because we are human. We do have those moments where we're tired and we're frustrated and we seem like we're at the end of our rope.
Mm-hmm.
And the really wonderful thing is that at any moment, you are one thought away from finding that place of peace again.
Yes, and that whenever we're in that place, it's typically because we've neglected our core needs and aren't taking care of ourselves. And that when
mm-hmm.
we can refocus on the self-care element of what is it that I'm really needing in this moment to take care of myself, that's when the stress gets released. That's when the frazzle unfrazzles. That's when we're able to recenter and regroup, just like you said, one thought away. It's that simple. And so I really encourage people I work with to have, you know, those tools very clearly outlined for themselves, whether it's taking 10 deep breaths, whether it's going for a 5-minute walk, whether it's, you know, writing something in their journal or reading some affirmations. Everybody has different things that work for them. I don't think there's one way, but it's finding
mm-hmm.
what works for you and what can you do no matter what situation that you're in. Even if you're in a room that you can't leave, what are some skills that can help you meet those core needs so that you're able to shift back in that moment as soon as you have the awareness that I'm not okay right now. What can I
mm-hmm.
do in this moment? And that is so regenerating to know I always have the inner resources to take care of myself no matter what. That, for me, is just so helpful to be able to know that I can handle whatever comes my way. It's never
mm-hmm.
going to be something that I don't have the internal resources to manage and handle. I may flounder. I'm human, too. It may not look
mm-hmm.
pretty at the beginning, but as soon as I'm aware of, oh, I'm not okay, all I need to do is recenter. And from that place of center, when I act from there, everything flows. Everything works from that place.
Yes. And the ideas that you are, you know, touching on about self-care are so important. And just as you said, there's no one way that works for everybody. And this is, again, something we've talked about a lot on this show is self-care and the fact that there's really two parts to that. And one being the care, the really that gentle compassion you're showing yourself and the things that are restorative and rejuvenate yourself. And then the first part being self, the fact that those activities and those concepts and those things you do for yourself are very unique and that what works for my sister may not work for me and,
right.
you know, what works for me may not work for my mom. But the fact is that whatever works for you is okay and is acceptable and is helpful.
Yeah, as long as you're not hurting yourself or hurting someone else, Because there are ways that we can, typically with those core needs of safety, belonging, and importance, as humans, we found ways to meet those needs momentarily that don't really help us in the long term, whether that could be through drugs or alcohol or overeating or overshopping or, you know, all those kinds of behaviors can feel like we're meeting those needs in the moment, but they're not really true self-care. So I think it's really important that you, you know, you point that out in terms of what real self-care is and what that looks like. And that, yes, it can look different for different people, but we have to be very honest with ourselves about whether it really is self-care. And a lot of that can be the intention behind it. If I, you know, I love exercising now as an adult. I hated it when I was younger, but I love it now. But it's something that I find very nurturing. But if I was to, you know, do it in a much more obsessive kind of way than I do, even though it's a good activity, it wouldn't be a nurturing behavior. And so it's really about being clear. Is this supportive and nurturing of myself? Am I meeting my needs in a way that is long-term good, not just short-term gain? And that, for me, is a really important distinction regarding the self-care element, because sometimes eating a delicious dessert is complete self-care. Other times, you know, sort of emotional eating to numb out is not self-care. So it's a lot to do with the consciousness and intention that we have behind it. So I just thought that that was important to know.
It is important. And it's, I was giggling because it's become an open joke between my clients and my friends and pretty much anyone around me that cupcakes are part of my self-care. And so it's no secret to anyone, and it comes up a lot. But in that, you know, there are bakeries that are a treat for me and that I really then enjoy the entire experience of it.
Right.
Now, if I were to make myself 2 dozen cupcakes or go and buy 2 dozen cupcakes and sort of mindlessly devour them, I would question if that were self-care.
Right.
And so, just as you said, the intention behind the activity really is just, it's a clue to whether it's self-care or not, or whether it's numbing out. And I always encourage my clients to have a list of about 30 things that they see as self-care. And you make the list when you're feeling really good, because when you're feeling really down in the dumps, it's hard to see anything that feels nurturing. And some of those items are things you're going to do every day. You know, there are times when I'm writing in my journal every single day, or that might, for me, like that first cup of coffee and really starting the day slowly and with attention is a way for me to do some self-care. And exercise for a lot of people, that's, you know, that's their, one of their daily, or mostly, most days, their daily practice of self-care. And then there are some things that I kind of call, you know, your emergency self-care, that when you are feeling really out of sorts and frazzled and anxious, these are the things you do that really get you back to yourself. And some of them are going to be quick, you know, again, like sort of that cupcake theory of, you know, they can be quick, they can be inexpensive, they can be something that just reminds you of what a wonderful human being you are and how to treat yourself with that gentleness and compassion. And some of them are longer. You know, I always say that when I'm really in a funk, I go visit one of my best friends. You know, I'll go to New York, or I'll go to California or Ohio and visit a really a close friend, because I know that I always leave those trips feeling more relaxed and centered and joyful and more like myself.
Yeah, there's so many different ways, and I think the most important thing to remember is that all of those tools are just tools that work to help you connect with what's already inside. And sometimes that is a loving friend, sometimes that is a cupcake, you know, but it's that's the tool that's being used in that moment to help you to connect to that sense of well-being that's already there and always is there, but gets clouded over. And, you know, things in life, typically it's not the things in life, it's our interpretation of what is going on in life that creates that cloud.
Right.
And so when, you know, it's recognizing that we're human, recognizing that we have those moments where the clouds do cover the sun, where our negative thinking does come in and cloud our experience and our ability to connect with our internal well-being. I love what you're saying about having those 30 things already outlined very clearly as to what do I do when that happens? Because these are my tools that I'm going to use to help me reconnect with the sun that's always there, that helps me clear those clouds away. And that is when I'm talking about the personal empowerment piece, that is the personal empowerment. When we can do that for ourselves, we feel empowered because we're no longer at the whim of other people's moods, at external circumstances. We're then able to be connected with that sun inside of us, with our well-being, through our volition and through our behaviors. And when we're not, that doesn't mean we're bad. It doesn't mean we're not good enough. It just means we have another opportunity for healing and growth.
Right. And there's two things that come up for me. One is I look at that list of 30 as your cheat sheet.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're creating your game, if you're creating your life as a game, why not set it up so that you can win? And why not set it up that you know you already have the tools when things seem rocky? You know you have the tools to smooth the path.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I really love that you're the image that you're creating of clearing the clouds away and really just the sun is always there, but sometimes it gets cloudy. And that's so key and that's so important because it's not the things that make you feel better or feel happier or more in touch with your well-being. Those are the reminders and those are the ways to clear the clouds, just as you said, because there is that pitfall that it's easy to fall into of, well, I feel better when I eat good food, so I start overeating. And we think that there are, you know, a good glass of wine makes me feel better, so it must be the alcohol. And it's very easy to think, well, what makes me feel better? I have to keep going back to that in order to get back in touch with, you know, my happiness and my well-being. And the truth is that, you know, those are the reminders. Those are the time, those are the spaces of time we create for ourselves, and those are the just the spaces in general that we create where we can get back in touch with our own well-being.
Exactly. So not to confuse the tool with the experience. It's not
the
glass of wine that makes me happy. It's that that helps me to relax and then I feel happy. Or
and it's the slowing down and it's the space. Yeah.
It's all of that that helps me to really connect with what's inside. And, you know, wine may or may not do that for you. It depends on how it affects you. But anything is like that. They can always be double-edged. Anything that's overdone, even good things like exercise or, you know, eating healthily, if that's taken to the extreme, it becomes really unhealthy. So, but that's when there's a confusion with it has to be this thing outside of me that's allowing me to feel this way. Therefore, if I do more of it, if I really focus on it, and that's sort of then it's no longer a tool. It just becomes, well, it is a tool. It's a tool for unhappiness at that point rather than the tool being used to help you connect with your internal well-being. And so that's that double-edged recognizing. Am I giving something outside of me the power to make me happy, or am I recognizing that pretty much everything can be used for as a way to help me connect internally? Even the things that are the hardest for us. And, you know, when people come to me and they're really upset with another person, I'm like, that's great. We've got something to work on now. And they're like, what? And it's whatever it is. And one of the exercises that I do is like, what is the quality that you find most upsetting to you about the other person? And many times for women, it's anger. Many times for men, it's any kind of vulnerability. And those qualities that they're seeing in the other person that they don't like are usually qualities inside of ourselves that we're not willing to own. And so when we're able to say, okay, this person really upsets you, what is it about them that you don't like? Okay, great. Now let's look at that quality. How does that show up in your own life? And sometimes it shows up in how they treat other people. Many, many times it shows up in how they treat themselves. For example, with the anger, I use myself as the example. My husband, I experienced him as really angry. I hated that. But I wasn't in touch with my rage. I was so angry. And I was not, you know, I'm a good person. I'm nice. I'm not angry. I was very angry. And so what it was that I found upsetting in him, I wasn't willing to feel inside of myself because it was too scary for me. It meant all of those things, like I was bad, that I was wrong. But instead I was saying he was bad and he was wrong. That was much easier.
Right.
And so by being able to own that projection, you know, to own the part of myself that was angry, that I wasn't wanting to see, that's where the healing was. That's where the healing began in terms of being able to feel it and then recognize this is just feedback. This is not good or bad. This is not right or wrong. This is an authentic emotional experience that is there to give me feedback and let me know that I'm off track and that I need to make different decisions for myself, that I shouldn't have quit my master's program and gone back to work, that really what I wanted to do is stay in my master's program. And when I was able to do that, that's when I went back. And so it was very important to be able to see, you know, for me to be able to see that blind spot that I wasn't seeing. And that's what's really difficult. And that is where I think the coaching piece comes in, because we all have blind spots. And even though I don't do the work, I may see things differently that I don't have the same blind spots that my clients have. I have blind spots in my own life. I think we all do, and that's why I think coaching is important for everybody. And when they're revealed to us or when we're able to see things differently, it's like, oh, my goodness, that was always there, and I didn't even know it. And how could I do
that? Well, and it's definitely a two-way street, too, because when we can take ownership of these negative feelings, like you were talking about the anger, then you can treat other people in your life with more gentleness and compassion because you're seeing, okay, wait, it's okay. The anger is okay. And again, this is just one example. When you are able to say, okay, I can still love my husband even if he's, you know, being angry, then you can treat yourself with more gentleness and compassion as well because you're seeing, okay, wait, this is okay in other people. And when did I become outside of people? You know, that's something I see all the time with clients is, well, I'm really kind and compassionate to people, and yet they're punishing and beating themselves up. So I ask them, when did you become outside of this group we call people?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I want to be clear in terms of the distinction that you made at the very beginning, and that if I'm loving my husband when he's angry, that doesn't mean that I'm, you know, allowing him to treat me badly. The loving act in that moment might be to say, wow, you're really upset. I love you, and I'm going to the store right now. So it's about really being able to be loving and also set healthy boundaries. And that, I think people get confused about what unconditional love is, and they feel like somehow that means I unconditionally say yes, and I unconditionally allow, and I unconditionally condone. And that's very, very different than an unconditional love. An unconditional love is being able to be loving to another person, accept them as they are, but it also allows us to then be unconditionally loving to ourselves, too, and say, huh, this isn't working for me, so the loving act for me to do now is to leave or do something else or say this, say something right now. That's what is important for people to be very clear about in terms of what that means.
Right, yeah, and it's an important distinction because I tell people, you know, giving someone forgiveness, giving them unconditional love does not give them license to treat you as a doormat. And that's clear. I mean, that's important because when you forgive somebody for something, you're taking that knowledge of the situation. So it doesn't mean you're going to get yourself back into that same situation. If you forgive somebody for stealing money from you, you know, you loan them money and they don't pay you back, if you forgive them for that, that doesn't mean you loan them more money.
Right, right. And it doesn't mean that you're right that they didn't pay you back. It just means that you're
exactly
not giving them free rent in your mind, like you said earlier.
Exactly.
So you're not allowing your not connecting with your well-being based on their behavior from the past.
Exactly. So, Rohini, we're almost out of time, and I want to talk about your Empowered Women's Training. So this is starting in 2011, and it's for 9 women, and what you say is they're deeply committed to following their bliss, living their magnificence, and making self-care a priority.
Yeah.
And this is primarily over the phone?
No, it's going to be one in-person meeting a month. Typically, I think it's going to be on a Saturday. I haven't got the date set yet. But there will be also one phone coaching session a month, as well as one conference call a month to sustain the support. And I really want to create very powerful experiences on the days that we spend together that will then be supported with the phone work in, during the month until we come back to the next day together. And I'm going to be really focusing on all aspects of how we connect with our well-being through relationships, through self-care, through authentic self-expression, through inner and outer beauty. Those are kind of some of the themes that are going to be looked at through our financial
Beautiful.
Goals. Yeah. So I'm very
So how can it's going to be an incredible group. I mean, just knowing the work that you do and the space that you'll create for these women, and, you know, it's going to attract, I know it's going to attract really fantastic members, which will then just create an even more powerful experience. I'm really excited for you.
Thank you.
Now, how can people find out more about you? Of course, they can go to my show page and connect through my website and through Facebook. They can find you that way. Is there any other way that they can connect with you directly?
Yeah, I can give you an email address for them. that's rohiniross@gmail.com. And if anybody
Perfect.
Has
so if anybody...
Yeah, if something wasn't clear, I'd be happy to answer those questions.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been really insightful, and I love the exploration around relationships and really, you know, our own personal power in growing those. I think that's been really exciting. So thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you, Bevan. It's been a real pleasure. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
Fantastic. And for all of you listening, we'll be back, of course, next week with another fantastic interview on creating the life you love to live. You can find out more about me at www.bevanlynch.com. And I look forward to sharing next Wednesday morning with you.
Come in for the Spring Black Friday Savings event at Lowe's, where you'll find great deals on everything you need to get your home in shape for the season. Now is the time to save big on all of your spring home improvement needs, like Kingsford 2-pack 18.6-pound original charcoal briquettes, now $12.99, and a free Cobalt 40-volt battery with purchase of any Cobalt 40-volt handheld outdoor power tool. Make your home happy all season long with great brands at great prices right now at Lowe's. Offers valid 3/30 through 4/11. Limit 2 twin packs per customer on charcoal. Exclusions apply while supplies last. See store for details.